A ver qué les parece eso. A ver, para toda la gente que le gusta la salsa. Tenemos aquí un poquito de problemas con un cable, pero espero que a ver si ahorita hallamos la solución. Vamos a mandarle un saludo también ahí a la misteriosa y al misterioso. Ellos son de León, Guanajuato. Para toda la gente de León, Guanajuato. Así que ahí la tenemos ya, una salsita. Una salsita romántica, pero muy sabrosona. Así que gracias por sintonizarnos, 101.1 FM, Radio Santa Cruz con el DJ Cañón. Todos los sabaditos el programa Puro Cañonazo. Todos los sabaditos de 2 a 4. Así que les hacemos la invitación cada sabadito de 2 a 4.
Coming up very shortly, a rebroadcast of Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides.
Happening, and nothing going on. There's always something cooking, and nothing in the pot. Traveling on, but don't think twice, it's all right. And it ain't no use in turning on your light, babe, the light I never knowed. And it ain't no use in turning on your light, babe, I'm on the dark side of the road. Still, I wish there was something you would do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. But we never did too much talking anyway, so don't think twice, it's alright. Calling out my name, girl, like he never did before. And it ain't no use in calling out my name, girl, I can't hear you anymore. I'm a-thinking and a-wondering all the way down the road. I once loved a woman, a child I'm a-told. I give her my heart, but she wanted my soul. Don't think twice, it's all right. I'm walking down that long, lonesome road, baby, where I'm bound, I can't tell. But goodbye's too good a word, gal, so I'll just see fairly well. I ain't saying you treated me unkind. You could have done better, but I don't mind. You just kind of wasted my precious time. Don't think twice, it's all right.
Okay, coming up, a rebroadcast of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and we have Robert Norse on the line. Robert?
Rob, you there?
Hello.
There he is. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, you're on the air.
All right, well... Hello, Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobes Pier Robert, a.k.a. Robert Norse, in beautiful San Jose, downtown San Jose at St. James Park. It's a huge park which actually has one or two people lying down on the grass. And, of course, a squad car parked nearby. And we have...
What are you doing there?
Well, we're killing time until curb hugger Chris Joyen, the... spiritual leader at some time of the Peace Camp 2010 is released from the lockup, where he has been freed tentatively pending a hearing on November 1st when he goes back to federal court on rather serious charges of hacking. And I can go on if you like. Or
and, well, what's the mood like? Who's with you, and are there officers standing around?
Actually, it looks pretty peaceful. I see a squad car, but no officers. Ed Fry is doing, not calisthenics, slow motion, I don't know, is it Kung Fu or Fung Fu or, it's hard to say. Ed does.
Quin Chai.
And we have, Ed, as you know, is freed on bail to appeal his charge of lodging, which he's been convicted of in criminal court along with his... the true villain in this piece, Gary Johnson, who's also here.
So they've both crossed city lines, then.
All three of us are in the San Jose, St. James Park. Who knows? Maybe it's criminal after dark. We'll find that out, I guess. And there is somebody sleeping on the grass. Not sure. Is that a man or a woman?
Allegedly
sleeping. Now, I want to let the listeners know what happened today in federal court, because it looks like Santa Cruz will again be seeing the friendly face of cheery and somewhat scrawny Christopher Doyen, who is back in business. He's at liberty, and I want to give you his attorney, Ed Fry. Actually, he has two attorneys now. Ed Fry is one of them, and Ed is in a very whimsical mood. I won't go into the details. He's had a hard day. He's got a suit and tie on, or actually his tie on. Looks like he's dressed for court. But he also has his shades on, his dark glasses. So this may mean he's in a different kind of vantage point. I turn you over to Ed Fry. He can give you the update on what happened in court today.
Okay.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Who am I speaking with?
This is Rick.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well.
All right.
It was quite a day in court. It was federal court. It was a United States magistrate, you know, black gown and all. Big courtroom full of lawyers and clients. And Chris's case came about 10 down the line. And he came out and he was walking pretty stiff, but he looked pretty strong and a lot healthier than what I saw him last.
Now, Chris has been charged with hacking, computer hacking, or
federal computer hacking.
And so, what kind of is that a serious charge?
Well, yeah, up to 15 years, I believe.
And what was his bond set at?
It wasn't. He was released on his own recognizance. Well, I signed I think it was a $35,000 bond,
wow.
Personal bond myself. But I don't, I don't know if I'm a worthy bond signer.
And where was he? Where was he picked up? When? What day was he arrested?
About 5 days ago in Mountain View, in a coffee house that he couldn't stay away from.
And then they brought him down to San Jose to stand to face the charges
exactly.
That he has in Santa Cruz.
Right.
Okay.
So we're now waiting for him to be released in a couple of hours from the Santa Clara County Jail downtown.
How does he look?
San Jose. He looked better, like I say, than when I saw him last time, months back. He looks added some weight. Thank God, a little bit, not a whole lot, but he's as stern as ever and as determined to stand up for his rights as ever, and yet humble as ever before the court. So it was a good show, and the judge finally released him. Robert Norris, in his generosity, offered to put him up for a month, which is beyond the authority he had already retained or obtained from his landlord. So we're hoping for the best on that one, but in any event, he's sprung. He's got an order to spring him. He hasn't gotten actually out physically yet, but he'll be in Santa Cruz, and he's got restrictions put on him. Can't use the Facebook or Twitter or on and on, a whole long list of electronic crimes that he would be committing if he performed them.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of he's muzzled in a big way. Officially, anyway. So that's what's happening, and it's wonderful to think that he'll be free shortly. He's quite a determined individual, determined to seek and obtain justice, and that's what he's all about.
Well, he's lucky to have folks like you and Robert and Gary to trek over to San Jose and support him and.
He's
not alone.
I feel lucky to be associated with him. So.
Yeah.
It's
a good thing.
A big bus going by. I'm trying to get across the street. Maybe I should try to do that just this moment.
Okay. You want to put Robert back on, or is he?
No, I don't have to. I can go back to where I was. It was a little more peaceful.
Okay.
But did you have any questions, or did listeners have any questions?
Well, there are no listeners on the other line, so guess I'll have to ask it. Should I be asking any more questions? Anything else that people need to know? Chris was kind of the leader of Peace Camp 2010, or the unofficial leader of Peace Camp 2010, and really took the reins and did a lot of computer stuff and photos and organization and that sort of thing. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He came about 4 or 5 days into the sleep-in, which started July the 4th of 2010. Chris arrived 4 or 5 days later and liked what he saw and stayed to rise to the leadership position. Not that there were any official leadership positions.
Right.
Do-it-yourself kind of...
Unofficially, he took the reins and made certain things happen, like other people did.
Yeah, and he was really quite a master and a wizard of media attention. He captured a lot of that electronically. So it was great, It was good for the movement that it got to be known in India right away. The India Times, for example, printed a story about our sleep-in, as it was happening.
Wow. That's cool.
News travels fast these days.
And then about 30 days into the sleep-in, he was arrested along with a few other people. Is that fairly accurate?
It varied. It was only about 35 days.
Yeah.
I think was the first arrest, something like that, roughly. So, I'm pretty sure he got arrested in the first wave.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But in any event, why don't I turn this over to, do you want to talk to Gary?
Sure, if Gary wants to talk to me.
Okay, hang on. Not really. Hey, what's up, Rick?
Hey, Gary, you're on the air.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, it kind of put you on the spot and me on the spot, too. I have no idea what I'm going to say to you.
Yeah, and I have no idea what I'm going to say, but I'm standing before a sign that says, "Welcome to your neighborhood park. Park rules prohibit," and there's 21 items. The first one is, do not gauge in commercial activity.
You can read them all. I'm in no hurry. And.
Read
some of the significant ones, the ones that stand out in your mind. Can you skateboard there?
No.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
okay.
That's number 816.
Damn.
So skate in lines. And my favorite is number 3, no performing, entertaining, or exhibiting. You can't be entertaining in this park. I might be breaking the law right now, although that wasn't a very good joke.
Yeah, and I mean, when you think about it, parks are not meant for entertaining. I mean,
No. They're
meant for other things. They're meant for park-like things.
And number 11?
Yeah.
Just to put everyone on notice, no air jumpers, bounce houses, or inflatable houses. So no bounce caps.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Edgar Winter is not allowed either because number 6, no amplified sound.
Okay.
I
note a bit of sarcasm in your voice. Now, you think these laws are stupid or ridiculous?
I think they're in some ways actually necessary because if people actually came here and enjoyed themselves, they might question all that other crap they do all the time and think better of it and start doing this stuff instead. So, yeah, they got to curb time, place, and manner of enjoyment because otherwise, you know, people would run amok having fun and stuff.
Right. Life might even be enjoyable sometimes, huh?
Yeah. And, you know, that's pretty sure it's unhealthy as well as against the law.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough. Robert's sarcasm is rubbed off on me. I can't stop.
I am going to put on George Harrison's Blue Jay Way as we start to wrap up our conversation.
But before you do that, Ed wants to say something. And then, he doesn't want to say something. Okay. And I'll make a request.
Okay.
Goodbye, Pork Pie Hat. Either the version with Joni Mitchell and Jocko or Andy Summers.
What was the song? What is it?
Goodbye, Pork Pie Hat.
Oh, okay, I don't know if I can find that.
Yeah, you probably won't. Anyway.
Does Robert want to conclude with anything?
Yes, he does, but I think he's interviewing himself. Hold on a second.
Robert Norse interviewing himself.
Hello America.
Robert, were you just interviewing yourself?
Not at all. I was doing a recording for a subsequent show, and I, the maestro, will be in the studio. And I won't have to rely on some questionable individual to pass on my golden words to the audience.
And this is the thanks I get.
Exactly. It's a thankless task. I mean, let's face it. Actually, I do want to thank you, Rick, for taking over at short notice, coming to the studio and, you know, putting on a creaky old antique Baffert Spears broadside for people to enjoy and snicker at.
You know, you're doing a voiceover right now to the Beatles' Blue Jay Way. And it's quite effective.
I see. I'm not quite sure what impact that's going to have on people. But I would have been... Actually, I was about to read this Welcome to Your Neighborhood Park sign, but I think I was beaten to it by the infamous Gary Johnson, who...
Well, you can give your own version to it.
...his heels in the county jail for sleep crime.
Give us...
Know that. I mean, we're making jokes that Gary is also facing a 6-month jail sentence. He actually has been convicted... In spite of the fact that he's homeless and had no legal place to go on the night when he did a peaceful protest in front of a county building,
mm-hmm.
He is, you know, he's only out on appeal, and that appeal will, you know, only go so far but until the judge's cronies, and unfortunately that's who they are, state, forget it, back to jail with you, buddy.
Sounds pretty serious to me.
You know, I am being sort of light about it, but yes, it's very serious, not just for Gary, but for others. Not just for people who are homeless, but for anybody who wants to engage in a political protest in the state of California.
Well, I was being sarcastic in terms of what the charges are. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous, but it is serious in terms of what he faces and what he might have to go through.
And Chris Doyen faces the same charges. Actually, I think the charge was dismissed today, or his warrant was dismissed, I believe. Chris had a warrant in Santa Cruz because he didn't show up
for the same thing that Gary and Ed Fry and a number of other people, actually about 30 or 40 other people, were accused of. 647E, the penal code that says thou shalt not lodge, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Gary, Chris is not going to be tried in absentia. I don't think they can try you in absentia. I think they have to. They just play a warrant. What's that? That's true. If there's a trial set and then the people don't show up, but their attorney is there, then they can be tried. But I think they have to have an attorney present to be tried on a misdemeanor charge, or they have to, you know, claim they're representing themselves. In which case, they don't get tried. They just get, you know, a warrant is issued for their arrest until they're, you know. But that's just my ignorant, non-legal, unresearched opinion. Gary may well be correct. I doubt it because I'm always right.
Robert? At what time did the judge finalize everything in court release, say that Chris was going to be released, give the order that he be released?
Well, we showed up at 1:30, and I believe we had to wait through a bunch of other cases, which was pretty quickly done. This is a large courtroom. It's a federal courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
And there were solemn people in business suits walking around, but the judge was pretty laid back. And it was Judge Lloyd. I had said Boyd when I wrote about it for the Indy Bay, but it was Lloyd.
And what time did he give the order for the release?
Well, there was some concern because originally the person who wanted to put Chris up only wanted to put him up for a week. And Chris's defense lawyer, Jay Lieberman, came over and said, well, look, can you put him up for longer? Otherwise, you know, Chris actually wanted to be given a condition that he could check in, but he didn't have to be in anybody's house because Chris prefers to live outdoors. He's a sort of a, not just a homeless, a houseless guy, you know, incidentally and by necessity, but also by choice. So the judge didn't like that idea, but he was offered to, you know, finally a place in this guy's house if the guy would offer more than a week. And the guy reluctantly offered more than a week. And another person agreed to pay a $35,000 penalty if Kerbucker Chris did not show for the November 1st hearing, when he will be continuing to defend himself against serious charges that will result in could result in 15 years in prison and $500,000 fine, again, for taking down the county website for 15 minutes to half an hour, I believe it was, in December of last year. Chris has also been, there's been some suspicion that he's been involved in other things with a group called Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Anonymous has taken credit for taking down the BART website in San Francisco, the Orlando, Florida website. Orlando is the city that's been harassing homeless people with food, not bombs. So it's an interesting question. Well, I don't think Chris is charged with any of that stuff. And it's not clear that what evidence they have linking him to any of these so-called crimes, which some would call patriotic acts of protest, to draw the attention of the community to abusive state institutions that are engaging in institutionalized hate crime against poor and homeless people.
Was there an order given by the judge that he could not come on the radio and be interviewed?
Not at all. He can be interviewed when he gets back. In fact, I hope to have him on the show on Sunday if he's up for it. He's not allowed to use a computer in
Twitter or Facebook.
A number of contexts, Facebook, Twitter, and I think some other computer service, and he's not supposed to contact other individuals who are named defendants as part of Anonymous. Anonymous is also accused of bringing down PayPal in retaliation to PayPal's blocking WikiLeaks contributions last December, I think it was, or January. Interestingly enough, at the hearing, one person who did show up is a rather famous hero of mine, David Harris. I don't know if you remember David. People who are, you know, over 50 or over 60 will probably remember him. He's the guy who was he was Joan Baez's partner in the 60s. He was a leading draft resister. He went to jail for 2.5 years. He was a conscientious objector. He's now a published author. He has written numerous books. He's going to be on probably my show in the near future. He's tried to write something on the Anonymous group and its actions around PayPal, the website. And there's some of the connections between that and the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy San Francisco, who knows, Occupy Santa Cruz actions that are trying to emulate Middle Eastern democratic movements, which are trying to begin a real democratic process where people get into the streets and don't just sit around and say, oh, please, please, Mr. Legislator, won't you, you know, do something? And it's rather people themselves decide to do something and essentially move the country to move beyond the corrupted and bought-out legislators of our time. You know, and we actually can get something other than bankster justice, which is what we got now. We got, you know, we got the war machine, we got the banksters, we got a whole criminalization of poor people. And, you know, the question is, will movements develop in different cities against this? I mean, as more and more people become immiserated, more and more people feel the you know, bankruptcies, foreclosures, loss of work, hunger, all those things which you read about in the papers and hear about on these little free radio shows, but don't really experience much of until suddenly, wham, bam, there you are.
So tonight after you get off the phone, well, I'll be playing a rebroadcast of the September 18th Bathrobes Piers Broadsides.
Okay.
And that is, I'm looking forward to that. I haven't heard that one. And,
I think it's a debate on smart meters, but I could be wrong. I'm trying to put that stuff up online for those who are interested. There is a new website, or the old website, the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, huffsantacruz.org, is getting better. It's looking a little better. It's not updated yet, but it is somewhat compacted and easier to see. So I encourage people to go there. And if you go there, you can, you know, access old Bathurst Spears broadside shows if you're a glutton for that kind of punishment or have that kind of interest. And you can also read ancient articles from 2003 and 2004, unfortunately, which describe a situation which is still pretty much the same, if not worse.
Okay. And this Sunday, an interview with Chris.
Hopefully so, if he agrees to it, and who knows who else. We may, who knows who will be. We're still trying to get Wowak in the studio, Sheriff Phil Wowak. His office respectfully declined.
That's not going to happen. I'm sorry to say.
I'm afraid that's not going to happen. However, I want America to know, and particularly Santa Cruz, we tried to get the sheriff to explain why he won't enforce the law regarding a moratorium on smart meters, and apparently he's just either too busy or too evasive or too something to come. Also, I have to admit that we also heard from a Zani Collective member. We heard from actually other people that were concerned that we want. There's a certain, well, we'll talk more about this on my show.
And Robert, I'm going to take.
Wait a minute, this is my show. No, never mind. Thank you very much.
That's what you think. I'm going to play some Bob Dylan.
Now we're talking, man.
Yeah, you don't mind, do you?
Whale.
All right.
That means I like Bob Dylan more than me.
As a matter of fact.
Thank you very much, Rick, for doing this. And anybody out there, my apologies for not being in town for a new show. I did have new stuff, but I was called away.
Okay, Robert.
Thank you.
Good luck. Bye.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of 12 dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard rains are gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I sun, newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. I saw a room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard rains are gonna fall. Oh, what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 100 drummers whose hands were ablazing. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. I heard one person starve, I heard many people laughing. I heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. I heard the sounds of a clown who cried in the alley. And it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard rains are gonna fall. Oh, who did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded in hatred. And it's a hard, 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 rains are gonna fall. And what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm a-going back out for the rain starts a-falling. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty. Where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters. Where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison. Where the executioner's face is always well hidden. Where the hunger is ugly, where souls are forgotten.
Well, black is the color and none is the number. And I'll tell it and think it and speak it and breathe it. And reflect from the mountain so all souls can see it. Then I'll stand on the ocean before I start sinking. Then I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard. Rains are gonna fall.
And coming up will be a rebroadcast of Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides, the September 18th broadcast. And I'm having such a good time here in the studio working the equipment. Eventually you'll hear it. Because I'm going to do a few more creative and artistic things, such as play a couple of station IDs. I'm going to play a little pitch for some money that you can write out a check and send to the station. Cleverly and creatively segueing into a part of a John Lennon tune, and then you will hear Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides. All of that will take about 2 minutes.
Hey, this is from Merlin, specifically for Skidmark Bob. Anarchy is dead, and so is freedom of speech. And if you don't believe it, you guys got your head up your fucking asses. And you can't play this on the air. You guys are fucking full of shit. Anarchy and freedom of speech is a myth. You guys are full of shit.
Hi, we're the Devil Makes Three.
Yeah.
And
we listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1.
Arr! There was no feeling in that.
There was no
none whatsoever.
This time with feeling. Hello, we're the Devil Makes Three. When we're not illegally downloading music from the internet, we're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.5 FM. Through every station in the house.
101.1, dude.
101.1, you fucked it up.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short head, yellow belly, son of tricky dicky's gonna mother her, but top so me was just a pocket full of hope.
Thank you. coming up next on the stream of Freak Radio is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, your favorite Sunday morning show. And on this station, or in this case, this stream, your only Sunday morning show. Looks like Troublesome Thomas has taken a lengthy vacation while the rest of the studio, some of them, struggle to get an antenna up, and I believe that is in the process of happening. There's also some controversy about what frequency should be used, but it's in progress, I understand, from my overhearing the chitter and the chatter on the internet. So perhaps by next Sunday there actually will be a real live radio broadcast here on the stream, as well as the stream here of freakradio.org. If you are listening on September 18th, Sunday 2011, you can call in and be live on the stream. And the call-in number here is 831-427-3772, 427-3772, or 469-3119, 469-3119. So stay tuned for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We're expecting to have an interview with Mark of the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco around 10 o'clock. And who knows, we may be getting some updates on smart meters from Josh and some other updates from other folks, too. We'll see.
Jolly banker am I safeguard the farmers and widows and orphans, singing I'm a jolly banker am I. When dust storms are sailing and crops they are failing, jolly banker, a jolly banker am I. I check on your shortage and bring down your mortgage, singing I'm a jolly banker am I. When money you're needing, mouths you are feeding, I'm a jolly banker I'll plaster your home with a furniture loan, singing I'm a jolly banker am I. If you show me you need it, I'll let you have credit. I'm a jolly banker am I. Just bring me back two for the one I lent. A jolly banker am I. When your car you're losing, sadly you're cruising, I'm a jolly banker am I. I'll come in foreclose, take your car and your clothes, singing I'm a jolly banker am I. When bugs get your cotton and times they are rotten, I'm a jolly banker am I. I'll come down and help you, I'll rape you, I'll scalp you, singing I'm a jolly banker am I. A jolly banker am I. A jolly banker am I.
So will the Jolly Banker's Death and Taxes selection, Jolly Banker, become the theme song of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides? Well, until I can find a better CD, that could be it. I kind of like that tune. It's an old one, and again, the group is the Jolly Bankers, and too bad there aren't more songs on this disc, but I played them all a number of times. So that one, I think, bears repeating, particularly in these times when the banks seem to be holding their own while the rest of the, I don't know, 75% of the population is sinking down lower and lower. You're tuned, as I said before, to the stream of freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. The name of the show is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, although I haven't whipped out my bathrobe on the streets for quite a while. Who knows? That may be coming up. Not sure. No particular protests or plan, but I am getting regular reports from activist David Silva, who you've heard on the air before. He's a homeless advocate who actually was in serious negotiations with the city council about a decade ago to change the sleeping ban law. And he was sort of double-crossed by the mayor and the city council. And he also went out in front of the activists and sort of excluded some of us in his attempt to pander to the politicians, which was, I think, a mistake on his part. But he has done a lot of work around the sleeping ban. And he is not currently with a phone. He's run out of money for a phone. He's been sleeping at City Hall every night, illegally violating two laws, both the sleeping ban and the forbidden zone at City Hall law, cooked up by Parks and Rec boss Danette Shoemaker last year to end the Peace Camp 2010 protest. We'll see how he does with his partner. I guess he's tired of being on the levee and being rousted there, or hearing others rousted, which is another place where people are facing police harassment for the crime of being poor and sleepy at night. It's criminal behavior in this society. I mean, after all, we need consumers. We don't need poor people, and we certainly don't need poor people sleeping near the river mucking up the environment. I mean, who wants to bother to put in a public restroom? That would, after all, be a public expense. It's better to have somebody to blame for the environmental problems in the river. You know, I noticed today, as I was reading today's Santa Cruz Urinal, or Sentinel, as they call it, that there was a kind of a Save Our Shores cleanup action, which went down. I guess it's a weekly kind of shindig. And the headline in the second section is Save Our Shores Volunteers Scours Areas Waterfronts. And there's a long story by Jessica Pasco about Save Our Shores, picking up lots of liquor containers, hypodermic needles, bags of trash. 4,500 volunteers, annual coastal cleanup event on Saturday. I think it's more than annual. I think it's either monthly or biweekly as well, according to activist Steve Plaich, who we regularly have on the show, or at least have calling in on the show. The story says more than 17,000 pounds of garbage were cleaned up over a three-hour period, including 12,000 odd pounds of potential pollutants pulled from Santa Cruz County alone. 51 sites in Santa Cruz County, 30 sites in Monterey County to help remove garbage and debris from beaches and waterfronts, including natural bridges, Santa Cruz Wharf. Santa Cruz County, 2,800 plus volunteers, more like 2,900, worked at sites spanning more than 76 miles. Cowell Beach, Santa Cruz City Council members declared yesterday to be Save Our Shores Day, honoring the organization for removing 20,000 pounds of pollution from the area surrounding the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary each year. And here we are. In addition to the annual event, the organization also holds cleanups in Santa Cruz County on the third Saturday of every month. And then there's extensive quotes from a woman named Janet Fardette, who is, according to the writer of this story, led a group of women cleaning up the San Lorenzo River levee, calling themselves the Lovely Little Ladies Lifting Levee Litter, for a few hours every Sunday and Monday, cleaning up everything from plastic bags to hypodermic needles. The problem I have with this story, of course, is it doesn't really place the blame or the responsibility where I suspect it belongs. For example, the last paragraph of the story says, Fardette hopes that more members of the community will begin to appreciate the levee and work to take care of it and to eliminate some of the criminal elements that plague the area. Well, my question, this is a Save Our Shores Volunteers cleaning up the area. Are they primarily concerned, or is the main trash from a criminal element, or is it from the tourists who despoil the beaches? And frankly, I have a bias here, but I suspect it's probably there's an overwhelming number of people who come here every day. This is a beachfront resort town with a boardwalk, not to mention some nice beachfront parks. So, you know, let's be real clear about what the real situation is. Before we criminalize everybody in the parking lots downtown, let's find out if there's really crime going on there. Before we suggest that the real danger in the litter is from a criminal element, let's determine if that's actually the case and put some, you know, research into that. This, of course, the Sentinel is big on, you know, crime and pro-police propaganda. And to me, it annoys me because Take Back Santa Cruz is one of these groups that has been pandering to and essentially building on this fear and this mobilization, a right-wing mobilization against, frankly, against homeless campers, deadhead travelers, poor people, street performers, anybody who disturbs in any way the plastic fantastic approach of the middle class, dwindling middle class in Santa Cruz. It's instead of addressing the real targets that should be like Wall Street, which was unsuccessfully demonstrated against yesterday in New York City, the target becomes poor people and the criminals and the needle users. You know, instead of having some needle injection centers, instead of having some decriminalization of drugs where there can be actually places where people can go who have addiction problems, it's much, apparently, the preference for drug war warriors to get out there and, you know, continue to blame people at the high public health expense, create a whole criminal class. And the class, of course, that I'm often concerned about and talk a lot about is homeless people, because they are a criminal class in Santa Cruz. It is illegal to sleep at night under the city's municipal code 6.36010A. And even though the ordinance last fall provided that tickets would be dismissed if somebody got on the waiting list of the River Street Shelter or the Paul Lee Loft, and alternately, and or I should say additionally, if somebody is on that list, the camping law does not apply to them. I've not heard that the police are actually respecting this provision or that the Homeless Service Center is actually giving people any way of showing the police that they're on these lists so they can avoid camping tickets while the Homeless Service Center goes through its nightly charade of providing token shelter to people. It's actually a real activity when they provide token shelter. It is real token shelter for those who like to be seriously controlled and apparently don't mind the kinds of problems that arise at the Paul Lee Loft, as David Silva has talked about on the air before, and perhaps today we'll talk about again if he wasn't arrested for sleeping at City Hall last night. What I'm going to do again is play a very small segment of the dialogue I had with Monica Martinez on Voices from the Village about a month and a half ago, where she shamelessly lied about what her policy was. And I tried to let her get away with that lie because I hoped that she would feel obliged to follow up on the lie by keeping her, keeping up appearances. She claimed that there are, you can get a receipt or some kind of evidence that you're on the waiting list so that you can avoid these camping tickets. You can at least try to avoid them by showing them to the police department and then putting the burden on the police department saying, you know, back off, mister or ma'am. You know, it's going to be no point in giving me a citation. It'll be dismissed by the city attorney. And also, in a very real sense, the law specifies that the camping ban shall not apply to those on the waiting list. I'm on the waiting list. Back off. Monica Martinez, executive director of the Homeless Service Center, will not do this, although she is lying about it publicly and did on August 14th or thereabouts in a televised interview with Community TV. I'm going to play the audio section of that again so that people can have an awareness of who's running the show out at the Homeless Service Center, what they're saying. And hopefully, frankly, I'd like to see Monica, however much she may have, as Richard Nixon might have put it, misspoke in the past, start keeping her commitments and paying some attention to her real job, which is to protect homeless people from this kind of crap. And let's see what we, well, I played it before. I played it last time in the longer version. This, I think, is a somewhat cleaner version, and it's shorter. So you can hear Monica claiming what isn't true, but we hope will be true in the future, and then apparently wasn't true for the last month, so there was no change made in spite of Monica's protestations and claims.
From our studio audience, would you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Robert Norris, and I work with a group called Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Throwing the ball back to the police department and the city council seems to me to be a failed policy, if you're going to talk about failed policies. Mm-hmm. And you have here Monica Martinez. Monica is the executive director of the Homeless Service Center. A year ago, homeless people asked her, homeless activists pleaded with her to issue those receipts because that law is a year old that says if you're on a waiting list, tickets will be dismissed. So this could be shown to a police officer that they could still choose to start harassing the person, but it would serve as a deterrent. Monica, you steadfastly refused to do this, and your board has refused to do this. You've also discontinued the policy that allowed those who got camping tickets to walk into the Homeless Service Center and get evidence that on that night the Homeless Service Center was full, a letter from the Homeless Service Center, usually a form letter, because as you know, the Homeless Service Center is full throughout the summer. You have a 2 to 6 week waiting list, as I understand, if that was the case last year. If I'm wrong, I'd like to be corrected on any of this. We tried to get this from you a year ago. You refused to do it. You've refused to do it henceforth. You stopped emailing any kind of responses to us. I would encourage you to change that policy because I think it would help a lot of homeless people. A, restore the letter that says we had no shelter beds that night. So even if we weren't on the waiting list, maybe the person just got into town, they could say, here, Judge Commissioner Basket, I wasn't on the waiting list, but there was no shelter that night. That has traditionally been done for the last decade by the Homeless Service Center. And then secondly, to do what Steve has suggested and Louis has suggested, which is to issue a letter indicating that they're on the list at a certain date. I know they have to come back and they have to, you know, renew that and so forth. But I still think it would serve as a deterrent regardless of any discussions you have with the police department. Though I agree with Steve, it would be a good idea to have those kind of discussions. But we had this discussion in August of last year, and I heard from your board, oh, we're going to look right into this. And then, of course, nothing has happened for the last year on this issue. Okay. Perhaps you have something. And you can give me some answers to those questions. Thank you.
Point is taken. So what about that?
Well, did you catch a question? What was the question in there in particular?
Well, will you reissue letters that indicate that the shelter is full on any particular night, regardless of whether people are on the waiting list for the court's approval? And also, will you issue a letter or receipt or a form that says you've signed up on the waiting list?
So, as you can imagine, I've been in lengthy discussions with Robert. As you can see from based on his questions, they're certainly not short. There's no short dialogue with Robert Norris. However, you know, we do respond to any request from homeless individuals who are facing the situation that Robert is expressing. If an individual came in and said a letter would be helpful, we have that letter and we will provide that. It's not really something that happens in real life very often, but if it did, we would be happy to provide that. We have no policy, as Robert said, that saying that's something that we do not or will not do. We do not or will not engage in ongoing, never-ending dialogues and conversations, but we do try to meet the needs of individuals who are accessing services.
Yeah, I guess what he's asking is there a mechanism in place where people can come to you mm-hmm. for some kind of document mm-hmm. that they can show to the police?
Absolutely. If there's somebody who's being harassed by the police who is who has received a citation recently, we'll work with them. We'll, if it's a statement on whether or not the shelter is full, we'll provide that. If it's a letter, hey, case manager, can you sign this to say that I signed up, we'll give that, absolutely. It typically isn't something that happens very often, to be honest, but it's certainly something that we do.
All right, well.
Yeah. And that seems a pretty unequivocal statement from Monica Martinez. She's lying about it. No one has been able to get such a letter in the last year that I've heard about. People have tried. And more important, and perhaps more telling, In the last month since that interview, no one has been able to get such a letter either. Although, full disclosure, when one of our activists went and requested a letter, he was given a letter that said, not you are on the waiting list, but you are receiving services from the Homeless Service Center, which is not the same thing, because the Homeless Service Center provides a wide variety of services. Nothing essential, such as shelter, in the sense of any kind of, you know, the most pressing need of homeless people in terms of any meaningful, broad access to shelter or access to facilities that could provide emergency shelter for people. But you can get a meal there twice a day. You can get access to your mail if you're in good standing with the Homeless Service Center. You can get access to the showers. You can no longer store your property there, which I've been highly critical of. There are, in other words, a variety of services you can get at the Homeless Service Center. So when they say we're providing services on a note, that doesn't tell a police officer anything about whether you're on the waiting list, which really is the key issue, because the actual ordinance specifies that if you are on the waiting list, the law against sleeping does not apply to you, and tickets shall be dismissed if there were tickets issued. So that's something Martinez is unwilling to do, and more important, she misstates, or lies, I think it's really a lie, I think she knows she's misstating it, what she's been doing for a year, and her statement, which I kind of hoped would lead her, you know, out of a decent respect for the opinions of the community, having made that statement to change her policy in effect, even if she hadn't been doing it before, we can say we can let that slide, Monica. As long as you're going to change and do it now. She's not doing it now either. Although I guess you can say there have been some minor changes in that the person who went out there was told he should write his own letter and that they might sign it, which, of course, would be a change from the policy of the last decade when, as you heard from former Homeless Service Center Director Doug Loisel, who called in on Thursday night when I did another version of the show, that they provided a form letter. They put in your name, they put in the date of a camping ticket, and they said, you know, this person had a camping ticket on such and such a date, and the shelter was full. And then Commissioner Basket or the judges would just dismiss the case because that is, in essence, a necessity defense in Santa Cruz. They know that if they don't dismiss the case, although perhaps few homeless people have the resources or energy to do it, someone can demand that they be allowed a full trial, not a jury trial, unfortunately, because it's only an infraction, but a full trial to make the necessity defense argument, which is an affirmative defense, which means you prove by a majority of the evidence that you had no other option, you were doing the sleeping to avert a greater evil, that it was something any reasonable person would do, and so forth and so on. And the courts don't want to go through all that with every camping ticket that comes up, so they just dismiss the tickets. And there might also be an element of actual humanity or compassion or common sense there. Not with Monica Martinez. And I think the reason that they don't want to do this and dismiss camping tickets is twofold. That is to say that they don't want to give you evidence if you walk in and say, hey, I got a camping ticket. Please give me a, you know, something to verify that your shelter was full that night. They don't want to do that because, one, they don't want to offend the police department, and they're afraid they might do that. Two, they don't want to offend the Downtown Association and the merchants, who are all focused on this bogus notion that it is homeless people in the area that are ruining the economy, which, of course, is a fantasy. The economy is having a great time ruining itself and has to do with huge military expenditures and all kinds of bizarre priorities like funding banks rather than working people. So they'd rather prefer to live in their fantasy world that if only these, you know, these dirty people who are homeless and poor weren't visible, we could all pretend things were rosy and people would start spending their money again, assuming that people would have money to spend. And since the town, you know, since now it becomes catering more and more to the wealthy, to the well-to-do, you know, the well-to-do are making more money these days, so maybe they'll come and spend their money in Santa Cruz. This is not only a kind of a, I think, unrealistic assessment of the situation, it's also a vicious assessment of the situation in terms of its implications for the majority of people in the community who are still not rich. Anyway, I think there are other reasons that the homeless service center, and I'm speculating here, I don't know. I'm not on the inside, and I haven't got the internal track to Letitia Schwartz and Catherine Byers and all the notables who sit or have sat on the homeless board of directors. Steve Plaich has applied for the board of directorship, and he's who knows, maybe he can give us some insight into that. I alternate between damning him and praising him, and we'll probably continue to do so. I think another reason why they don't want to give out these citations, this evidence that the shelter is full, is because they want people to sign up on their waiting list in order to get more funding, to show that they're serving more people. And right now, the only way to get a ticket dismissed, other than to present a full-blown necessity defense, in spite of what Monica said, that they regularly give anybody a letter who wants one, which isn't true, as far as I can see, and, I'd love to be proved wrong. If you have any new information, any callers, any people listening out there, call in, become a caller, and let me know. The way they get people to, join the Homeless Service Center's list of clients is to essentially force them to get on the waiting list in order to avoid sleeping tickets and get them dismissed, which I regard, of course, as a form of coercion that is despicable in an organization that's supposed to be helping poor and homeless people. It's not that I necessarily have anything against people getting on the waiting list. I think it's a good idea, and I wish Monica would issue statements like she said she does, but does not, that people are on the waiting list so they could show them to the police. Martina said a couple of other things that are not true. She said that, this endless dialogue with Robert Norris. She hasn't talked to me since November of last year. Admittedly, I think I've sent her a couple of emails. Before that, we were having a lively email dialogue back and forth, and we're having some phone conversations because she seemed to be interested in doing just what we had asked to do, or at least getting past some resistance on the part of her staff or possibly the part of her board, reassuring her board, because Linda LeMaster, Ed Fry, and I had gone to the board of the Homeless Service Center, from which she supposedly takes direction, and requested that they provide, we didn't ask them to provide these letters, they were doing that before, and Monica stopped them. Although they stopped giving these letters to Peace Camp 2010 people, the people that were actively protesting the sleeping ban. Again, in what seems to be a really naked and abusive and selective form of discrimination against activists who are offending the police and offending the authorities for fear, perhaps, again I speculate, that they're going to lose some of their funding. It's really hard to know exactly what they're doing. Anyway, this is the documentary evidence that Monica Martinez, in early August of this year, specified that it was their policy, and it has been their policy, to provide letters documenting that their shelter is full on nights that it's full when presented with a camping ticket, and that if a person comes in and gets on their waiting list, that they will present a letter indicating that they are on the waiting list to that person, so that person can present that letter to whoever is interested in looking at it. She isn't doing that. But there she is saying she does. That's not just a doctored tape that I cooked up. You can go to online, Google to Voices from the Village, which is the community TV show in which she appeared, and you can hear her saying that. It really says some sad things that she feels she can get away with this kind of bogus presentation and then inaction, not even covering her own ass on this issue. But it's not over. And we'll see what happens next. Huff, again, has been making plans. We've been doing a lot of planning and a little acting to do some tabling out at the Homeless Service Center, maybe bring some media out there so we can document Monica's procedures, and maybe that pitiless light of publicity will actually encourage her to do what she is currently not doing and lying about doing. We'll see. If you want to get involved in any of these projects, by the way, or you have something you want to communicate off air to me, I do have a phone number, and that number is 831-423-HUFF. which is, of course, an acronym for Houseless United for Friendship and Freedom, or as I call it, because it seems more comfy to me to say it this way, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Again, 831-423-4833 is the number to call for the off-air message phone where you'll catch a hold of a message. You can leave your message. Try to leave a point of contact where you are. If it might be that you're a person without a phone. If you are and you show up at the Monday meal and you want to meet with me, I will either meet with you or perhaps I'll refer you, if they're amenable, and they usually are, say, to somebody like Steve Plaich, who does have a Monday Homeless Legal Assistance Project down there at the Calvary Episcopal Church every Monday from 5 to 7. And he also has it, I guess, two other days at the Homeless Service Center. I think it's Wednesdays and every other Friday, or is it Fridays and every other Wednesday? I have to review my notes on that, and perhaps if I get Steve on the phone this morning, we can have a chat with him about that issue as well. So, I'm expecting a call soon. I really hope that one comes in here. And I also want to announce that the American Civil Liberties Union Board of Directors meeting, which was slated for tomorrow in the Loudoun Nelson Center, has been postponed, according to newly elected or appointed board member Steve Plaich. Plaich says that the board has postponed its meeting a week, which normally would mean absolutely nothing to me one way or the other. But Plaich is bringing to the board meeting several peripheral civil liberties issues which have local implications, which the board usually wants to have nothing to do with. They're all for, you know, the woman's right to choose nationally, and, you know, and they're big time for prisoners' rights in, you know, at a statewide level, and so am I. But try to look at what's happening locally and put some responsibility on local law enforcement authorities and the mayor and the city council or the board of supervisors. They are not there. In fact, they're rapidly paddling the other way. And they will bury such resolutions as they have, or have buried such resolutions, such as around the sleeping ban law in the city, for decades. Whenever they come to them, they disappear into the maw of the ACLU, never to be seen again. Well, Steve Plaich and Jennifer Laskin supposedly want to change all that. And you've heard my rather skeptical view. I'd like to see a new civil liberties group that actually works on these issues instead of trying to persuade a Mike Rotkin-led group. Mike Rotkin, former mayor, was a big advocate of all these anti-civil liberties, anti-homeless measures, and try to get past that, which is just stupid, really. I mean, I suppose people think, well, the ACLU has to stand up and its principles and blah, blah, blah. Well, the ACLU is only as good as the people on it, and the people who are on it who have the power to actually activate it, and unfortunately, it takes more than two rowers to row a boat up the stream if you've got 16 different spots and you have other people in key positions. So, for those interested in the three issues that Plaich wants to bring up, can panhandlers have their doggies on Pacific Avenue, whereas others are allowed their doggies, panhandlers are not? And indeed, it is a civil liberties issue. But since most panhandlers don't have doggies, and most of the tickets are not for panhandling, but for sitting and other forms of ordinary use of public space that is being restricted or from which homeless people are excluded, it's a strange issue to bring up initially, rather than the obvious issues like the sleeping ban or the sitting ban or the forbidden zone situation or the parking lot panic law. Laws that have broader impact on people. But I'm still glad that Steve is mentioning it. But again, we'll have to talk to him. But what I've heard from him is that not much is happening with that. Only he and Jen seem to have an interest. And the whole, they couldn't get a quorum for tomorrow, so they're going to postpone it for a week until next Monday. The second issue is smart meters and the privacy issue for smart meters. Whether they damage health, whether a person is having their privacy imposed upon by these meters by giving lots of information to PG&E, which they can then market to other groups, not to mention the government. And also, I guess, whether people should have a right to choose on these issues rather than have PG&E impose this stuff. And that's an issue they're going to consider. Oh, these issues interest me. And again, the third issue is the issue that would really directly involves my legal case, which is going to be decided in about a week and a half before the U.S. Supreme Court, that is to say, Can a city council member simply arrest a person for refusing to leave the room if they make a critical gesture or comment which she or he, the mayor or a council member, describes as being disruptive, even if it actually isn't even noticed by the majority of the council, but just violates a council member's sense of propriety or his comfort zone, whatever? That's an issue that's coming before the U.S. Supreme Court, and they most likely are not going to look at it. They're not most likely going to turn it back, and it'll go to trial at a local level, and the mayors who did this activity, who arrested me 9 years ago, will face trial in San Jose. But that won't be decided until September, and the issue until late September this month, and maybe even early October at the Supreme Court, will know whether the court is interested in reviewing the case. And then if they do, it'll be another whole court term before we learn what they're going to do with that. I think it's an incredible waste of city money, not to mention an abuse of every citizen's right to speak her his view in front of the city council and not have to fear they're going to be arrested because Councilmember Robinson or Councilmember Coonerty, or in this case Councilmember Fitzmaurice from years ago, finds it indecorous and offending the dignity of the body in question. You know. So ACLU is supposed to consider these issues locally and maybe take a position on them. And that may happen a week from Monday, or it may not. I will find out from Steve what the chances are, although who knows how candid he will be or he will feel he can be. I'm still waiting for a call from Mark at the Coalition on Homelessness, an activist I spoke to, two or three days ago up there. San Francisco's Coalition on Homelessness publishes a weekly, I should say monthly, I guess actually twice monthly, newspaper called Street Sheet, which they sell and distribute in San Francisco. Homeless people do. It's not the same as the one that we distribute down here, Street Spirit, which is also out of the San Francisco, Oakland Bay area and is distributed up there and has expanded to 16 pages recently. If you want to get the new Street Spirit, look for the car with all the bumper stickers on it. There's actually a couple, but you may find mine. And, you know, buttonhole me, and I will give you a Street Spirit, and I'll encourage you then to give a buck to a homeless person, because that's what Street Spirit is for. Or if you're a homeless person and you want to sell Street Spirits, you know, check me out. I also have a meeting with other Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom members every Wednesday. That's at 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe in downtown Santa Cruz at 703 Pacific, and I'll have Street Spirits with me there. And there are also some Street Spirits at the Sub Rosa as well. But in any case, Street Sheet is another newspaper, and he's been working there for a while. He's also been homeless. He's also been, he's noted that there's a crackdown in San Francisco on homeless people, and I was going to talk to him about how things are going there, what the laws are there for people sleeping in their vehicles, since there's a controversy about Palo Alto and what's going on in Palo Alto. Palo Alto currently has no law that criminalizes people who sleep in their vehicles, unlike apparently San Francisco and Santa Cruz, which is a crime to sleep in your vehicle, even if you have no legal place to be or go. Although that provision theoretically would be overturned if you are on the waiting list of the Paul Lee Loft or the River Street Shelter. Why these private organizations should somehow make you exempt from prosecution, and only those two organizations, is rather interesting. It shows a sort of strange collusion, and inappropriate collusion, between the Homeless Service Agency, the Homeless Service Center, and the city government. I mean, it's not that I don't like to see people put in a position where they can get their tickets dismissed, or not even be ticketed at all. That would be very nice. Although that, as far as I know, I've seen no example of that happening, partly because nobody has been issued a statement that says, I'm on the waiting list, even though numerous people have been put on the waiting list, and several have asked for such evidence. I think David Silva among them. We're going to learn more if David calls in today, but again, he doesn't have a telephone anymore. He wasn't able to afford it. I also want to note, I think I mentioned this on Thursday, that I got a sum of money, not a very big one, from a woman who should remain anonymous, who wants Silva to have a little money for his reportage into this radio show and his general situation. She's agreed to, well, the person, let's not say he or she, has agreed to match anything. I think it's up to $50 is what she said. And so if people want to donate something to David Silva as a reporter, and you know who he is if you've been listening to this show, give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF or email me at rnorris3@hotmail.com, and I will pass that information on to the donor, and the money will be passed on to David Silva. And again, 423-4833 is the number to call off-air to get in touch, or rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, and then the number 3@hotmail.com is a number to, I should say, an email to pass on that information. Let's hear a little music, and then hopefully we'll get a call, and if not, we'll proceed half steam ahead.
Gangsters of the world ride high, not small. the creek, going up to see him at the middle of the week. Kiss him on the lips, just sweet like wine. Wrap my legs around him like a sweet potato vine. Going up the creek, going up the girl, going up the creek, see my girl. Going up the creek.
Two more from the Jolly Bankers, Death and Taxes, Ways of the Gangsters, a traditional Langston Hughes number, according to the linear notes, and Left Up Cripple Creek, a Pierce Woodward traditional tune. You are tuned to freakradio.org. It looks like we're not getting the call that I'd hoped from San Francisco. So what I'm going to do instead is give you a few updates and then play something I've kind of been keeping in reserve here. It's, it's a little off topic. In fact, it's rather significantly off topic. It is a Julian Assange interview, not my Julian Assange interview. Assange, of course, is the guy who is being prosecuted for sex without a condom and a couple of other alleged sexual assaults on two women over in Sweden. He isn't being prosecuted. He isn't even being charged. He's being investigated for it and was held in England on high bail and is still being held there pending deportation. He's the head of WikiLeaks, a group, of course, that achieved world fame by releasing evidence of the murderous activities of various governments, most specifically the U.S. government and its blatant murder and cover-up of murder in Iraq in the famous video that can be seen on your computer screen very easily. And, of course, I guess the name of that video will be mentioned in this interview. Before, however, I do that, I'm going to make a couple of comments. Palo Alto has been doing a lot of talking about this, about what to do about those pesky homeless people in their vehicles. But as usual, there's no statistics about any particular level of criminal behavior or even level of complaint. There are complaints against people living in their vehicles. Some folks who live in houses nearby are uncomfortable. There have been isolated instances of people discarding their waste in the street. Not many. I just heard one or two. There are instances of people in vehicles being rude when they're told to move on because they have a right to be there, whether the person in the house likes them there or not. And there's been a lot of dialogue and discussion about this. The Palo Alto City Council did have a law they were considering that would criminalize, like Santa Cruz, people in their vehicles, even though for many people a vehicle is a affordable housing. That's it, as I've said, for a decade or more. And so I may do some discussion of that and kind of read from some of the Palo Alto interaction online and in the in response to the Palo Alto newspaper discussion. There's a weekly newspaper, Palo Alto Weekly, and there's also Palo Alto Online. There is a Good Times story that came out day before yesterday that is about the downtown ordinances. And you can read it online, and it's it's about street performers and how can we improve the laws around street performers. The word homeless, I don't think, appears in the article. But I tried to post a comment there about the article, which makes also no mention of the voluntary street performers guidelines, which were destroyed and discarded by the city council in 2003, actually initially in 2002 and then followed up in 2003, and have continued to be in that condition, and my comment has not been posted. But this story is called What About Art? You can get it in your throwaway Good Times if you find it downtown. It does mention the sit-lie ordinance and asking whether and of course this is the issue that this is how the author of this article, who I think is mentioned in the Good Times, for some reason his name does not appear online. I don't know, they're not giving the guy credit online. But back to this in a moment. Your calls come first. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
It's your roving reporter,
Steve Plaich.
That's me.
As I live and breathe.
Yeah, I thought I would call in now because this is really the only opportunity I'm going to have for a few minutes before my day gets away from me.
Well, that sounds good, Steve, because I know I've mentioned earlier your news flash that there is a postponement in the ACLU Board of Directors meeting that where you were hoping to raise issues which apparently may not be too raisable even at the next meeting, the smart meters.
Well, yeah, we're going to go forward with that when we meet. The problem with the meeting with it, though, was just a lack of quorum. I guess Peter Gelbaum, who's as the president of the chapter, is out of town. And some other folks just weren't available. And as we expand the board, it's more difficult to get a quorum. But looks like we're going to meet on the 26th and be discussing a whole range of items, one of which is the North First City of Santa Cruz, also one of the downtown ordinances anyway, panhandling with the dog, condition which we think is really onerous on homeless folks and people who are just trying to scratch out a few bucks to eat. And we're also going to be talking about, I think just tangentially, the smart meter situation. Right now, I think what we're concentrating on, Jen Laskin, and you know Jen, has been doing a lot of work in support of the folks who were removed from the homeless encampments in Watsonville. And she's been working with the Watsonville City Council and some other groups to try to find some remedy for those folks down there. Mm-hmm. And she's been very, very active in doing that. So at some point you may want to try to get a hold of her or email her or maybe arrange to have her do an interview about that, because she is really engaged.
Now,
in
Steve,
issue.
If you've been listening to Free Radio, you would know that I actually have interviewed her a week ago at the Watsonville shindig. And also,
oh, good. Okay, yeah.
But, I mean, it's a very good suggestion. But, again, we mustn't confuse social service with ACLU, which is concerning itself supposedly with the civil liberties or lack of civil liberties of homeless people and others in our community. So while it's very nice that Jen is meeting with the police chief and meeting with the mayor and blah, 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 the question is, are these practices going to be stopped? Not, how can we help these poor old homeless people? No, it's how do we restore basic rights in our community? And that, of course, is the same question I would encourage you to raise at the ACLU.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more, and I'm sure that will be raised in the course of our discussion. Also, I was appeared on behalf of the ACLU at the latest Latino Affairs Commission meeting in Capitola this last week, and their open question, of course, is all about ESCOM. So, on that,
and again, Steve, describe again for our listeners what ESCOM means.
Secure Communities Program was originally designated as a program, it's not legislation, by Department of Homeland Services and through the Department of Justice here in California, and it's really administered by our deputy, our chief, Phil Wowak, County Sheriff, and the Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. What happens is that any Latino, and generally speaking it's just unconstitutional profiling Latinos, but any Latino, male or female, who is arrested and is put through the system at our jail in any respect is liable to be put on a hold, 42-hour detention hold by ICE. And initially the program was designed to kind of identify and exclude by means of deportation the higher level serious felons. What's happened in reality is that our statistics say that about 71% of all the folks who are processed Latinos, who are processed through our county jails, are people who have been guilty of either infractions or uncharged misdemeanors and things like that. And they have been put on detention hold by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And we were working with the Board of Supervisors to try to restrict Sheriff Wolak's funds to implement this program, which is really the only supervisorial or control method they have, because, as you know, he's elected independently and he works independently and does not have any direct supervision by the Board of Supervisors.
And how is that going? Is that proceeding?
Well, it is proceeding. Your old friend Mike Rodkin is meeting with Phil Wolak on our behalf. There is a task force being created. Mark Stone and Phil Wolak are working at that. We are insisting that we be given representation on the task force. They had a similar task force in Santa Clara County, but it was almost exclusively, I think it was exclusively, law enforcement people. So we want to have somebody from the Immigration Action Group that really is in the forefront of the FSTOM mobilization here and in Watsonville. Tomas Alejo, if you know Tomas, is their spokesperson. And we would want to have a representative from the Immigration Action Group and maybe the ACLU as well, to kind of voice our concerns and put as much pressure as we can on Phil Wolak to, as you know, adopt maybe a model that is being used by Mike Hennessy in the city and county of San Francisco that is certainly less onerous on Latinos and certainly more in line with what the Immigration and Customs Enforcement should be doing.
Now, Wolak is under some pressure, I know, from smart meters people.
Yep. There is. Yeah, if you go online and you see the county website, there is a recall petition filed by Joshua Hart on behalf of the smart folks.
And I guess what I'm wondering, let me finish my sentence, is
sure.
That Mike Rodkin, he seems a strange person to be negotiating with Wolak considering his local civil liberties or anti-civil liberties record, but, you know, I know that he probably does share our concerns at some level and in some issues. Has this resulted in a drop in the number of people being held in jail and then deported for, I don't know, jaywalking?
And that we don't know. We have relied on Paul Johnson. You know Paul. He's kind of been getting all the statistics together, and when we had our FSTOM forum at Loudoun Elston a couple months back, he was the main presenter on the statistics and what we had gathered and what kind of been collated from the arrests that have been made and detention holds have been placed. So all we really have is statistics from about April and May. We don't have anything over the summer, so we're working on getting those to see if whatever pressure we put on the sheriff's department has had any real effect.
I mean, you might be able to find out from people with links in the community whose relatives suddenly are disappearing south of the border, you know.
Yeah, but Paul seems to think that whatever statistics we need are readily available in matters of public record. So while it would be great if we had the troops to go out and be canvassing our Latino community, and, you know, maybe someone who had those kinds of connections like Tony Madrigal and folks like that would be more engaged on the issue, we might be able to get some of those statistics that we need to kind of buttress our arguments about the enforcement of the program.
Or possibly a massive protest at the sheriff's office indicating that the community won't stand for this, regardless of how long and who gets appointed to what commission, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I think at one point, the Immigration Action Group, who really does have the people to do that kind of thing, either was talking about or planning to have just that kind of mobilization and demonstration over there in force. I don't know what's happened with that because I have not talked to Tomas in a bit, but I know everybody's working on it, and we're going to see what we can do to influence Phil's enforcement of the program.
Now, reluctant as I am to bring up what I regard as a failed organization, the ACLU locally, this meeting on the 26th, the Monday after next at 7 o'clock at Loudoun Elston,
uh-huh.
Will you be assuring as best you can that this meeting will be open to the public?
As far as I know, you have attended ACLU board meetings yourself, and so you know what the procedures are. I think that there is a public portion of that, and then there is a closed portion. The closed portion would certainly be any time we go over finances, any time we're considering prospective board members, that kind of discussion certainly would not be open to public.
Right. There's always a closed personnel section, but I think you know, if you and Jen, who are on the board, you know, and maybe those you can influence on the board, can be allowing the community, because the real issue for people is not the personnel of the ACLU or your finances, although it's interesting, that seems to be the, you know, the raison d'etre for the local ACLU is gathering money for the larger chapters. That's what I noticed in past visits I made there. In fact,
which they do with very startling efficiency.
For sure. They've got 2,000 members who are getting...
2,300.
More than that, who are gathering a lot of money, but not a fucking penny of it goes to civil liberties in Santa Cruz, which is very interesting. In fact, it goes to people who are anti-civil liberties, who are one of whom is the treasurer of the organization, your buddy Mike Rotkin.
Yes, indeed.
And
so we'll be, and I think that's an interesting issue, that when we meet next, I think I'll put that on the agenda or suggest that to Jen, just to clarify what the protocol and procedures are for public engagement and public attendance. So,
I mean, I would like to see you and Jen stand, I appreciate you doing that, Steve, but I would like to see you and Jen standing up at this particular meeting, making it worthwhile for the public to attend if they choose to do so, so that there will be adequate time both for them to speak, for them to hear the debate, and for them to see any votes and hold their ACLU members accountable, their board members accountable, for, you know, decisions they make that in the past have been, you know, wretched. And I think you are in a position to do this if you're not too busy schmoozing with Mike Rotkin.
Yeah, well, you know, Mike and I really have to spend at least half of that time there kind of firming our bonds of a solidarity. So
indeed.
That's very important.
People are beginning to talk about the two of you. I want you to know.
Now, anyway, I have limited time, so let me move on to, there's a demonstration tomorrow at the clock tower at 9 o'clock, as you may or may not know.
It's on Indy Bay. We're talking about the Save Our Knoll demonstration.
And they're marching to the City Hall, because evidently they feel, and I wasn't really aware of this until I talked to some people downtown, that there's some kind of a meeting going on with city officials and representatives of KB Home, so... that's an interesting dynamic that's working. As you know, Don Lane was heading a group that was trying to negotiate some kind of preservation of that burial ground up there that is on the knoll. As you know, that Branson Forty Creek development is 30 individual homes, only 7 of which actually are abutting the knoll, and one new road they had put in. So that was what the Ohlone elders were talking about in terms of preserving the sacred burial sites, that over 6,000-year-old Ohlone burial
site. A more limited approach.
Yeah, more limited approach. Whereas the Aspinall folks are very much interested in the cessation of development up there in its entirety, and that none of that should be developed. So there are differing kind of agendas, even within the group, I think. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. But they're going to go march to from the clock tower, 9 o'clock sharp, they say, over to City Hall, and then they'll do kind of a drum and chant circle, which they always do. And then I guess one or two of the leaders of that group, Kat is one of the guys who's the leader, will presumably try to seek access to this meeting. I don't know how that will go or what their strategy is.
Now, do we know the nature of the meeting that they are concerned about at City Hall?
All I saw in the email and all I've been able to gather from people I've talked to is that there is some meeting with KB Homes officials and city officials. Now, I have heard from other folks that while there was supposed to be kind of a cease and desist to on KB Home's part not to do any kind of grading or ground prep or anything like that up at that project, I had heard kind of over the weekend that they had resumed some kind of excavation or grading or something. And I thought, well, maybe it was just in the parts that weren't affected by the burial ground, and there are those who say the entire area is a sacred burial ground, and I wouldn't argue that.
Now,
I had heard that they were doing some excavating, so maybe they're going up there kind of as an emergency measure to make sure that KB Homes is abiding by whatever agreement that they
now
would
who
have.
Is KD Homes is the corporate group that's doing all this.
Yeah, they're the developers. They're building the home.
Now, Steve, I mentioned that you're holding your usual 5 to 7 Monday Homeless Assistance Project sessions at the Calvary Episcopal Church, the free meal there. But you also have 2 new times, Friday and Wednesday, at the Homeless Service Center at 115 Coral Street. Can you give us again what those times are and what people should bring? If people have a problem, what should they bring with them to seek your assistance and so forth?
Well, it's 1 to 3 at every Wednesday at Page Smith Community House, and then 1 to 3 every other Friday at Reveille Family Shelter. And anybody, people who are homeless, people of reduced, modest means are welcome to come and seek some legal assistance. And they, all they need bring is whatever paperwork or information they have that we can kind of understand what the problem is and we can figure out how to approach it.
Now, you haven't been listening, but I recently played on air Monica's comments that you heard. Actually, we both were in the room when she stated that it was the policy of the Homeless Service Center to issue letters attesting to the fact that someone's on the waiting list, because that will then, if it won't immunize them, but it might cause the police to think twice before ticketing them.
Yeah, I was there.
And she said she'd do that, yet when Casey Livingood went there to get such a letter, he was turned down. Do you have any indication whether this is because Monica's instructions haven't filtered down, or because Monica doesn't intend to reverse the policy, or perhaps because, you know, there's some wild and crazy black magic going on out there at the Homeless Service Center?
I suspect that it's probably because it really hasn't filtered down. And what I had suggested immediately after that broadcast is that with somebody, maybe Becky, maybe yourself, get an oral verbal transcription of exactly what you said, and then I could take that up to her and say, well, this is what was said on the television show. You know, what are we going to do about it? But I haven't received any of that information.
And actually,
I don't want to go up and quote her verbatim.
Yeah, I did do that, actually, and I think what I can do is email it to you. I have to dig it out of my records and pass it on to you.
If you do that, then that's something I can take to her.
I will do that, Steve, and I'll pass it on to you, and I appreciate your, you know, taking on this additional task. You, of course, are a needle exchange worker, suicide prevention worker, homeless legal assistance. I, by the way, I saw a story on Save Our Shores, which I guess you were working with yesterday.
Yes, indeed.
And it's interesting. Do you know this Janet Fardet woman?
Janet Fardet. The name is not familiar.
Well, there's a picture of her picking up trash along the San Lorenzo Riverwalk. Unfortunately, there's not a word mentioned that Save Our Shores has any particular interest in protecting or respecting homeless sites. There is a statement, however, that Fardet hopes that more members of the community will begin to appreciate the levy, work to take care of it, and eliminate some of the criminal elements that plague the area. Is that a primary purpose of Save Our Shores?
No, we're not in law enforcement. We're in preservation of the environment. So, and oftentimes when we do public relations outreach and things like that, they don't get the full detailed explanation of exactly what our aims and objectives are. So I suspect that that's just like any other reportage. It's just very general broad stroke and really doesn't address any of the details.
Sounds like it's also the Sentinel maybe slanting the story there.
One other thing, I will be doing a shorter legal clinic tomorrow at the Red Church because at 6:30 or so I'll be over at the Museum of Art and History, where, as you know, your good friend and mine, Mike Rockin and Cynthia Matthews, the two former mayors, as they're being called, are hosting a sustainable water forum. It's an invitation only. So we'll be over there as East Alternatives and our group, and hoping we're going to have perhaps a couple of forum mayors ourselves, maybe Cleo Scott and Chris Crone, and another future mayor, as you know who that might be, to have kind of a counter demonstration in make sure people get all the information about the desal question.
Who might that be?
Interesting event.
Who might that be?
I don't know. Austin Hailed is the eighth council.
Yes. So, again, what time is this event and where is it?
The event is at 7 o'clock at the Museum of Art and History. It's being hosted by what's being called the Sustainable Water Coalition, which is actually Mike Rutkin and Cynthia Matthews. Cynthia, of course, is positioning herself on desal for yet another run at City Council in 2012. And Mike, because he's become a spokesman for the pro-desal groups and actually for the city, you know, ex officio, they are hosting an invitation-only forum.
And your opposition to desal springs from the fact you feel this is a waste of money, pretty much?
Well, I believe that we can accomplish the same. It's all about supply and demand when it comes to water and water sustainability. And we feel like the supply we need is available. All we have to do is have a greater commitment toward environmentally safe and energy sustainable alternatives and conservation measures. Rainwater catchment, gray water recycling. There's a dozen things that the city hasn't really even considered. That's unfair. They have considered and rejected in their integrated water plan, which we feel really would address the problem without spending the cost is now at $130 million for a desal plant, and they've already spent between 12 and 15 just on the pre-plans and specification stage, also their public relations and outreach. So we're kind of a disadvantage. You know, our public relations budget is probably $2,000, and theirs is $298,000. So it's it's all about the Benjamin.
So finally, the issue I have for you is one that really is perhaps nearest and dearest to the hearts, how's that for a nice cliche, of the listeners, which is, since you are not only a person who gives these homeless legal assistance kind of clinics, but you're a person who is not afraid to give out his cell phone number to homeless people or ordinary individuals who are concerned with homeless people about legal issues that may come up or issues that may, you know, require some legal expertise.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been getting any calls from the homeless community, and what have they been about? I know you can't name names, but what kind of issues, if any, have been coming up in your 334-8692 phone calls?
We're getting some discussion of, garden variety violation of downtown ordinances, which everyone should be concerned about. Because, as you know, they are targeted at the homeless community. I've gotten a couple of camping ban inquiries about how I can help with that. As you know, I was helping on Linda LaMaster's case, as you know, which has been put off now until October 28th for the hearing on Jonathan Gettleman's petition for habeas corpus. But just a lot of very strange kinds of disagreements between folks, and most of it is kind of demystifying whatever the legal system seems to be operating, and to try to find some way for people to kind of seek satisfaction in whatever dispute or disagreement they have. So it's really a lot of it's garden variety, but some of it has been in response to the enforcement of downtown ordinance.
And how many calls would you say you've received in the last month?
Oh, probably a couple of dozen, I would say.
Uh-huh. Not to mention my 40 phone calls.
There you go. Anyway, I've got to run. I've got some things to do, but that's all the news for now, as they say.
All right, C. Plaich. And again, should people give you a call and you want to give out your number one more time?
Absolutely. You can call me anytime at 334-8692, and I'd be happy to render whatever legal assistance I can. And in any other way, I'm always available. People talk about homeless advocacy problems, or for that matter, ACLU problems. They have suggestions such as the ones that you have, to try to broaden that our approach and to really try to make it more egalitarian, representative to the liberty values in the city. We're trying. We're doing the best we can, and it's a battle.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. I don't know if he's trying the best he can, but I'm certainly glad he took 15 minutes to give a report. That was Steve Plaich, activist who is endlessly running for Santa Cruz City Council, who, again, works on a variety of projects from Save Our Shores to needle exchange, to suicide prevention, to desal plant alternatives, to the ACLU, to homeless legal assistance. The guy exhausts me to even think about it. And though he and I have significant differences of opinion, I don't think he needs any transcript of Monica Martinez's words to be able to confront her with this issue. And he was in the room when these comments were made. In fact, he kind of justified them, and he lied it over them after they happened. Nonetheless, he has made an offer, and I'm going to take him up on it. I'm going to pass on to him the specifics of the written transcript of Monica's comments, and we'll see what her response is. Perhaps his pressure will help facilitate the ability of people to get these statements that then may put the police in an awkward position of either harassing people in spite of the declared lack of shelter and in spite of the specific laws that says thou shalt not, it really says thou shalt not ticket. It doesn't use the word ticket. And many have said, well, that's just a defense in court you can use. It says, say that the law does not apply if you're on a waiting list. But in fact, it can also be interpreted as thou shalt not ticket someone if they're on a waiting list. And it should be something that every homeless person does. Although, who wants to get on a waiting list? Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Yeah, Robert, I just had a couple of comments. I listened to Steve Plaich's discussion, if
sure.
I might.
Of course.
And the main thing, as I see about the local ACLU, is that they do not take on law enforcement locally when it gets down to abuse of power. And to say that these things don't happen in Santa Cruz is an absolute lie. And I can claim, and I think you would agree, as recently as the West Modes affair.
Oh, sure. I mean, and not just the West Modes affair. They on all these issues, they don't take on law enforcement. The last time they took on law enforcement, I think, was in 1993 when there was a proposal for a Citizens Police Review Board, and the ACLU held some forums. It was the Coalition for a Citizens Police Review Board got the ACLU from San Francisco to come down and talk about. John Crew was the ACLU guy then, about the need for a really effective Citizens Police Review Board. And, of course, what we got in Santa Cruz was not an effective Citizens Police Review Board, but we did get one with some powers, most of which were never used, and the entire board, of course, was destroyed with not a peep from the ACLU in 2003.
Yeah, no, I think these things need to be said, Robert, and I thank you.
Sure.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe someday in detail again. I may or may not show up for the next ACLU meeting, but they want to be the ACLU, Santa Cruz chapter. They want to claim that they're defending the Bill of Rights in Santa Cruz County. Well, then you have to do something to reconcile with your history
mm-hmm.
rather than blow it off and say, let us know if something happens next.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are situations that are very, even recent, but even if they're not recent, Mike Rodkin's been around since the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
He can't just blow this stuff off.
But he does, as you know.
I was going to say disgusting. I didn't want to. It's very difficult politically to accept this kind of stuff. I realize it's a small town. You see, we don't like to bring up names and stuff. But, my goodness, if we can't do that, well, then we'll look the other way at whatever goes down, and we'll take on an issue that's 1,000 miles away, or we'll take on immigration. But if we can't take on local law enforcement, it's all a fraud.
Right. Well, of course, you know, you and I and those usually on the outside have never had any problem with naming names. And indeed, sometimes so-called progressives don't have a problem if it's limited to, I don't know, Beach South of Laurel critiques or, you know, I don't know. There was some initial support against the sleeping ban in the late 90s from progressives before they actually got a majority on the city council, and then everybody but Crone and Sugar went running the other way, and they didn't really have. They were kind of left out there with their asses hanging out, but they kind of gave up on it, too.
I remember that phase. Where there was hope in the air.
There was. You know, but again, you know, I have the same thing that I always say when you bring up this issue is we know the ACLU is full of shit. So the real question is, how can we get a group together that isn't full of shit?
Yeah,
they're not going to
change. I'm half with you, Robert.
For
I swear.
Because I think we can find those people. I think you're raising these issues alerts people, even some people inside the ACLU, to the fact that, you know, the ACLU is, you know, in the clutches of political forces that are antithetical to civil liberties. And we need, you know, not so much to spend our time rescuing the ACLU as to rescuing the Constitution in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, that's very well put. I mean, when it's local, there is a firewall.
Yep.
So basically, not to be too gross, but it's BS.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And Robert, thanks.
Thank you,
right.
Man.
Hopefully I'll see you Monday evening.
All right. I may see you down there at the DeSalle shindig.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
And why would I go to the DeSalle shindig? That would be, of course, at 7 o'clock at the Museum of Natural History on Cooper and Front Streets, probably because there'll be a large crowd of people, some of whom might be interested in the other issues that I'm interested in. And, you know, I also hate to see the city spending huge amounts of money that could better be spent and doing so at the behest of politicians I detest, and generally speaking, like Rotkin and Matthews, and holding closed meetings, a procedure I also detest. That might be one reason I might show up at that meeting. So you are tuned to the stream of freakradio.org, www.freakradio.org. Santa Cruz, California is where we're at. And we are still not on the air, and we're still looking for donations and assistance and advice and new sites to put up the antenna, although I think we are working on one particular site. You can leave a message at freakradio.org if you have any suggestions, encouragement, support, And even just a pat on the back, you know, that's great. We got one of those from Bob LaMonica, the caller who just called in. Thank you, Bob, when you called in on the Thursday, or was it last Sunday, the last couple calls, and you were glad to hear that. I think I spoke a little too soon when I suggested we might be back on the air today. We aren't, and I don't even know if we'll be back on the air next week, but there are indications that we are moving in that direction, and so that's definitely a good thing. So, well, I am going to, I guess, seek a musical break. And we can, let's hear a little bit of Rovix, one of my, sometimes I like him, sometimes I don't, but I might like him this time. And then we'll get back into other matters, which mostly homeless-ish type matters. And I may play that Julian Assange interview, since it seems like there's going to be significant time to do it, even though it does not bear on homeless issues directly at all. It bears on government secrecy, and it bears on revolutionary activity in other countries. I'd love to see some revolutionary activity locally, frankly, some where people stand up and assert their rights and say, you know, screw the commissions, screw the procedures, we don't think they're working, we know they're not working, it's time for some elementary justice, and that is to be the real issue and the real focus. But, of course, being something of a realist on some level, I know that ain't likely to be happening soon. So let's see what we got here. Oh, yeah. Well, here's a few interesting songs. These are some of these are real dated, but hey, I like history, and maybe I can get you to share my affection for it.
Our grandparents were born here. Ancestors lived with this earth. The land is the people, and the people are the land, and this is the land of our birth. But now you want to move us off this mesa, as if you can take a body from a soul. You want to take from us our paradise on earth and trade it for a mountain of coal. What if they were coming for your grandma? What if they were coming for your child? What if they were tearing up the ground beneath your feet, even taking the rivers that were once running wild? What would you do if they were coming for you? Liver of our mother, and it must remain in the ground. The trees are her lungs, and the rivers are her blood, and they should all be left as they were found. But now you slurry coal across these pastures, and your trees all go to feed your hungry mill. You would have us live in rows of shacks without our sheep on your church rock uranium spill. What if they were coming for your grandma? What if they were coming for your child? What if they were tearing up the ground beneath your feet, even taking the rivers that were once running wild? What would you do if they were coming for you? Down a Hogan's door. We will say to anyone who listens, relocation nevermore. So won't you come to Big Mountain? Bring everything you can, but come today. This is the land where we belong, and this is the land where we will stay. What if they were coming for your grandma? What if they were coming for your child? What if they were tearing up the ground beneath your feet, even taking the rivers that were once running wild? What would you do if they were coming for you? What would you do if they were coming for you? What would you do if they were coming for you?
And that was a song about Big Mountain, which was a big issue about 11 years ago. And let's see if we have some of the linear notes on that. I've been kind of rolling around on the internet trying to find out whatever happened in that struggle. He doesn't have a lot of specifics on that. The background has to do with Navajos versus coal companies, as I understand it, and the Black Mesa of Big Mountain. And some of the history back into the 90s was in 1882, the Hopi Reservation was created. The Bureau of Indian Affairs agent created a reservation centered around his offices located near Hopi villages on the mesas. The Dinah